A Man Alone by Andrew Rissick. Antony, with Ronald Pickup as Philip Tremaine.
I get home, usually, at around 5:30. I don't like to be too precise about my hours. I like a good lazy wander in the afternoon. These days I work in the mornings, have a light lunch, then go and nose around a few bookstores. Sometimes I find something I've written.
How much is this?
Let me see, sir. 20p.
Yes, absolute bloody disgrace. Okay, I'll take it.
Very good, sir.
When I get back, I make myself a light supper. I'm not a good cook. I manage an omelette or some scrambled eggs. Then I have a drink or two. I can't get to sleep. Sometimes I doze off in my chair, but in bed, when I'm supposed to sleep, I hardly sleep at all. I have some pills. They don't work.
All right, then, Mr. Tremaine. You can put your clothes back on.
Right.
There's nothing physically wrong with you, or nothing unusual in a man of 54. You're a bit overweight, and you drink too much. But I'm sure you can put that right yourself. How do you feel?
I feel terrible.
You're tired. You've been bereaved recently, I understand.
Yes.
It may not be very comforting to hear this, but I think in the circumstances you're doing rather well. You've had the stuffing knocked out of you. You say you don't sleep.
Not very well, no.
Well, that's no cause for alarm. I think this is a mild case of emotional exhaustion. I'll give you some pills.
Right.
Mr. Tremaine, I say this to a lot of my patients. Life is a vale of tears, I'm afraid. There's not much a doctor can do about that. Now, don't take these with alcohol, and I'd like to see you again in about a month.
I make an appointment, of course, though one does as one's told. Shall I keep it? I doubt it. What do consultants know about anything? For God's sake, they only want your money. In my hands I cradle the first edition I bought today for 20p. I wrote that in 1964. I look at it. Seems an awfully long time ago. Still, I read for a bit. Well, then I go up to bed. I read for a bit there. I turn out the light. Do I sleep? Of course I bloody well don't. At 5:20, I have 6 of scotch. That does the trick, all right. At 12, I wake feeling as if I've been punched in the head. Going downstairs, I catch sight of myself in the mirror. Not a pretty picture at all. If I go on like this, I've had it. Sometimes, during the day, I think of dropping what I'm doing, simply stopping whatever it is, and screaming. But I don't. I don't scream because inside me, somewhere, there's a small, private, protected scream that's never released. Yeah, very good health. God knows what's gone wrong. I can't explain it. I've not been all that good with other people. I do see that now. When I was 8, I had a headmaster called Tomkin. Sometimes you'd go to his study to get the cane. This was not unusual. Everyone got the cane sometime or other. But Tomkin tried to be as pleasant about it as possible. My best friend was never much impressed by Mr. Tomkin's pleasantness.
It's easy for him to talk. It's not his bum, is it?
But how many do you think we'll get?
I should think three each is a pretty good guess. If he gives me six, I'll sock him in the mouth.
You wouldn't dare.
Don't bank on it. Look, are you going to knock or shall I?
You knock.
Here goes.
Ah, the Heavenly Twins, Maud and Germaine. I bet your knees are turning to jelly. Well, come in. Shut the door. Now, look, if you talk very loudly after lights out, you can't expect to get away with it every time. That's not cricket, is it?
No, sir.
So, no hard feelings. But remember, the two of you, learn from your mistakes. Always learn from your mistakes. You're neither of you stupid. You know that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, there's no point in hanging about. You first, Moore, if you'd be so kind.
Anthony Moore was my best friend. We did virtually everything together and were often in trouble. I didn't call him Anthony then, I called him Moore. He called me Tremaine. We never used Christian names, except sometimes in the holidays. He'd been at the school a term longer than me.
Roberts? Excuse me, it's Jay.
Yes, sir.
Matron's got to do something with that disgusting athlete's foot of yours.
Yes, sir.
Go and see her after this assembly, will you?
Yes, sir.
Stevenage R?
Sir.
Tremaine? Tremaine?
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Wake up, Tremaine. When I was at school, my headmaster had a great big cane and we wouldn't have dared to go to sleep.
We didn't dare either, sir, for exactly the same reason.
I don't think anyone asked you to speak, Moran.
Oh, I don't wait to be asked, sir.
I'll whack you for something before this term's out, just you wait and see.
You already have, sir.
Have I really? I'd forgotten. What have you done?
Talking after lights out, sir.
That's a terrible crime, isn't it? Why'd you do it, foolish boy?
I get bored, sir.
I was never bored at your age. I was much too busy to be bored. I was out and about playing cricket and rugger, doing everything under the sun all the time.
Well, I'm sure you were, sir.
You're being rude.
No, sir, I was agreeing with you, sir.
Well, kindly shut up while I finish the register.
No one ever disliked Anthony. Even Tomkin seemed rather fond of him. But there were times when we all found him irksome and maladroit. He was tall for his age, and he walked in a shambling, dislocated way that was soon parodied throughout the school. His hair was dark and unmannerly. Whatever the barber did, it was still a shock of black. A sort of plumage marked him out. On the rugger field in those raw winter evenings, he was a hopeless case. Infuriated Tomkin.
That's right! That's the way! Oh, come on, Moore! Come on, you idle boy! Run, 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 run! Faster, Moore! You've got great long legs, Moore! Faster! Come on, you've got more wind than that! Feet, 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 feet! Oh, Moore. You're a disgrace to your side. We'll have to do something about you, Moore. Off you go. Showers, every one of you. I want no wet hair at tea. Tremaine?
Sir?
Over here, boy. You played very well. I'm very pleased with you.
Thank you, sir.
But allow me to give you some advice. Go down for those shots. Right down, do you see?
Yes, sir.
Much better way of doing it.
Yes, sir.
And you can tell your friend Moore that he can parade in my study after tea. I'm not having idleness on the field.
He does try, sir. He tries awfully hard.
Does he?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, why doesn't he succeed, then? You do.
He's no good at it, sir.
Ah, but does he want to be? That's the point.
Yes, sir.
Now, you cut along. You're a generous lad. Tell him he's only escaped death by a whisker this time.
Righto, sir.
I find it difficult now to account for how precisely we became friends. I think it had something to do with the location of my form room, which was on the ground floor next to the dining hall. I was often the first changed, and I'd go in and sit by the fire and wait for the bell for tea. One afternoon, Anthony came in and flung himself in the master's chair and sat staring at me with those green, unquiet eyes of his. He loathed Rugger. He asked me what on earth I saw in the game.
Charging up and down all afternoon, chasing that disgusting piece of old leather. It's insane. 2,000 years of civilization, and we're still doing things like that. Do you know how it all started? Rugby and football, I mean.
No, how?
Well, when criminals had their heads cut off, the mob used to put the head in a leather bag and kick it around for a lark.
Really?
Oh, yes. It's probably why Tonkin admires it so much. It's his prehistoric instincts coming out. Anyway, I'm hopeless at it. He'll just have to keep whacking me. I've no coordination at all. Well, I'm not bad with a 12-bore.
Do your people allow you to use one?
My father's dead. Mama doesn't care what I do. We sit up each night in the holes and play bridge. But that's illegal here. I suppose old Bottom Thrasher thinks we're going to get terribly depraved.
Is that what you call him?
It's his initials. He's called Oliver Bennett Tomkin. So I think it goes rather well. He's an idiot, of course. He should be grazing in a field, not running a school.
He's all right. I quite like him.
Schoolmasters are vermin. They should send people with ferrets to get rid of them. You know, Tomkin caught me reading Murder in the Cathedral last term. Do you know what he said? He said, "Ah, Moore, you'd better put that sixpenny thriller away before I give you a taste of the stick."
Isn't Murder in the Cathedral a sort of play or something?
There. Even you know, and you're in Form 1. But Tomkin never reads anything but the racing pages of the Daily Telegraph, and so he's never heard of it. I shall come back here when I'm a great strapping man of 20 and tan his arse for him.
You wouldn't dare.
Oh, yes, I would. Come here, Tomkin. I'm going to tan your arse, Tomkin.
For Pete's sake, Moore, he'll hear
us. No, he won't. He's watching the Rugger. Come here, Tomkin. I'm going to tan your arse for you, Tomkin.
Moore. Allow me to return the compliment. Into the study, if you'll be so kind.
Yes, sir.
Never make threats. You're in no position to carry out. Were you making a racket too, Tremaine?
No, sir.
No, I thought not. More?
How many did you get?
3. He thinks it's funny. My mother sent me here because she thought I'd get an education. But in fact, it's like being at a brothel for flagellants.
In the holidays, Anthony came to stay with me. My mother had left us when I was only a year old. And my father, who simply behaved as if she'd never existed, thought it healthy that I should have some company of my own age. During that quiet, pleasant summer of 1939, we used to sit on the veranda as tea was served, and my father would chuckle to himself as Anthony talked.
I think you do your headmaster an injustice,
please.
Anthony.
Oh, I don't think I do, sir.
Will somebody please tell me what a brothel for flagellants is?
I think, old chap, that that's a secret that Anthony and I shall keep to ourselves. Master Moore is quite inappropriately well-versed in the ways of the world.
All you have to do is read books.
Depends on the sort of books you read.
At home we have a book room. You can go in and read anything you like. My father used to collect them before he died.
He could hardly have collected them afterwards, could he?
Oh, shut up, you prize oaf.
Must say, I'd very much like to have collected books. But I never found the time or the money. There's so much else to do these days.
My father was a man of leisure. But I don't really remember him all that well.
A man of leisure?
That's what Mama says. I think that's where the money came from.
But what did he do?
I don't think he did anything. I think that was why he was so rich.
Well then, what are you two chaps proposing to do tomorrow?
I thought we'd go sculling on the river.
Can Anthony row?
I'm learning, sir.
I'm teaching him to feather his oar.
Goodness me.
He says it's more difficult than it looks.
I should say so.
I have problems with my coordination, sir. Everything looks so easy until I try it.
Well, if there's a war, you'll have to learn things like that. They'll march you up and down until you do.
Do you think there will be a war, sir?
I rather think there may. The Russians have dropped us in the soup. We made them a perfectly reasonable offer, and they've shown us the door.
They need the Tsar back.
They most certainly don't. Do you know what sort of a man the Tsar was?
Oh, the Tsar was a perfectly well-meaning sort of man, Antony. But he didn't understand his people. He never knew what they felt or thought or wanted. You've read some history. He wasn't unlike Louis the XVI. Anyway, Stalin has signed with the Germans. And that means that Herr Hitler may do as he pleases. It's not a pleasant prospect.
What will you do if there's a war, sir?
I expect they'll find me something to do. I can't join up, though. I'm past the age. And I never get a clean bill of health.
Papa fought the Pathans in India.
Did you really, sir? Or were they ferocious?
They were certainly very hardy. Of course, they knew the country better than we did. When we first went out, we were none of us used to the heat.
Papa was a magistrate when he was only 21.
Yes, that's right. Awfully big and important. I got pneumonia in the end and then bronchitis, and so they had to pack me off back home.
Did you want to stay?
Oh, I'd like to have stayed, yes. There's so much to get to know. And if you were a British officer, it was really rather pleasant.
Natives in turbans cleaning your boots.
There was more to it than that.
There's a stuffed tiger in the attic. Papa shot that.
Well, actually, several of us shot it. But I was allowed to keep it. I was the senior officer.
Oh, I've never been anywhere. I've hardly seen anything. Well, I've been to Paris, but everyone's done that, haven't they?
No, I haven't. Can you speak French?
Oui, monsieur. Je le parle merveille.
That's not bad. You're quite a sophisticated young man. Well, France is where Hitler will want to go pretty soon. But whether he can cross the Channel is another matter. Let's hope it's all academic, anyway.
Each morning we used to go down to the river and pretend to be pirates. Antony painted a skull and crossbones on an old curtain. He used to stand in the bows and yell at anyone who went past.
Get up aloft, you dogs!
Antony,
sit. Cram on the canvas, every stitch!
Antony!
Run up the black flag! I'll have no mutiny aboard my ship! Get aloft!
On the whole, the days were slow and lazy, and we took our time. And around mid-morning, we'd head back towards the house for something to eat.
Oh, I've told you, Philip. I just can't do it. It's my coordination.
You've got to pull on both oars at the same time. Otherwise, you just go round and round.
Oh, yeah, man.
Philip, Antony, boys.
What's up, do you think?
Hitler, I reckon.
Into the drawing room, fast you can.
What's up, Papa? It's the Germans, isn't it, sir?
No. That no such undertaking has been received. And that consequently, this country is at war with Germany.
Gosh.
Oh, that's that then. I expect you to think it's jolly exciting, but I'm afraid I don't.
What a bitter blow it is to me that all my long struggle to win peace has failed.
Do you think Mr. Chamberlain was any use to us, sir?
I'm sure he did his level best. But he's a provincial politician, not a diplomat. He was never going to put the wind up Herr Hitler. I doubt he'll be Prime Minister for long.
Who do you think we'll have?
I suspect we'll have Halifax. He seems the obvious choice.
What about Churchill?
Churchill's too damn difficult. He's not liked enough. War's an awful business. We seem to have learned nothing. And this time we'll all be involved. All of us. Everyone. Everywhere. You're lucky to be at school. You're lucky to be young.
I wish I could fight.
So do I, sir.
Well, it may go on for a very long time.
I am quite useful with a shotgun.
Perhaps you could try it out on Mr. Tompkin.
Gentlemen, some of us have fought the Hun before. Some of us know how careful and methodical they are. Some of us already know the firmness of their purpose. This is not a matter of Britain going to war to defend her own interests. No, by no means. What we are fighting for here is the freedom and liberty of the whole of Europe. We are laying down our lives so that others may live. We are doing this because we believe that everyone has a right to rule themselves on their own, in their own way. We do not see why the world should submit to the yoke of Nazi tyranny. We are not simply fighting to defend ourselves, I tell you. Incredible as it may seem to you now, who know the size and industry of the German machine, we are fighting not for today or tomorrow, but for ultimate and complete victory. And I say also that although our part in this may be small and menial, we shall pursue it with the same unflagging energy and zeal that will surely distinguish every one of our young men on the field, at sea, or in the air. We will now sing hymn number 84 in the school hymn book.
Come on, stand up. If that's true, what are we doing in Africa? What are we doing in India? Does anyone ever think about these things?
Shut up.
I know we're right to be at war. I know we're right to try and stop Hitler. But why should we have to listen to that stupid old man making speeches? He's not going to have to fight. He can say what he likes. He won't have to prove it.
Oh, come now, Anthony, you're surely not suggesting that our presence in India, in Africa, Canada, in Australia is remotely comparable to what Hitler is up to in Europe? Hitler's trying to subjugate the world. And I do believe, we're trying to educate it. Your political interest is commendable, and I admire your spirit, but you really know far too little of the world. And it's certainly not the fault of the British cause that your headmaster is a man of limited intelligence and ability, who's merely attempting to make the best of a very alarming situation.
He's a fool.
No, he's not. He's an everyday sort of man trying to do his best.
Tompkins says they're going to stop bombing us, flying over and dropping bombs.
I'm afraid that's only too likely.
He says they want to hit the aerodromes. They drop their incendiaries first, so they can see what they're doing. And then they just fill the sky with high explosives.
I imagine that's a pretty fair assessment.
Supposing we get killed?
Supposing you don't. Look at it that way.
The school was near the river, and we dreaded moonlit nights because the moon shone on the surface of the Thames, and the bombers could see their way by the light of it. Tompkin took to handing out little paper bags full of toffee, which he was supposed to chew if a bomb dropped, to absorb the impact, he told us. But at the first wail of the air raid siren, we all crammed our mouths with toffees. We all chewed and sucked and spat them at each other, and soon Tompkin was issuing us instead with little squares of rubber. They tasted much less pleasant.
Are you still awake? Can you not sleep with this din going on? It's 12:15. Porter's asleep, and Stevenage is actually snoring. There's been a direct hit on something near the river. I've just seen this whole mountain of flame.
Where?
There. People are probably dying.
I say, oh geez.
We could very easily be next. You know, by mistake.
Someone just dumping their bombs. It wouldn't be hard cheese then.
I don't believe anyone you know gets killed. I just don't. I'm sure I'm going to be all right. What are you reading?
Lord Jim.
The one about the coward?
That's right. Except that he's not a coward. He's morally very strong. Or at least I think so. I told you. Some Schweinhund dumping his bombs. I'm getting a little tired of reading. I think I'd like to write something myself.
Can you do that?
It's not as easy as I thought. I've been writing down bits and pieces, descriptions of things I've seen. I've got an awfully good bit about Tomkin, but often they don't turn out very well. I don't think I'll ever write a novel. I'll write about people, things that happen to you, characters you meet.
You could write for a newspaper.
Well, yes, but people throw newspapers away. I'd like to be remembered.
Have you got the thing about Tomkin?
It's in my locker.
Can I read it?
I might let you, but I don't want him finding it and taking it away. We can sneak off to the cricket pavilion tomorrow afternoon, if you're game.
I'm game.
Right, no one will find us here. But watch the window, just in case.
Righto.
Sing out Cavey if you see anyone. Oh, by the way, say if you think it's bad. I welcome honest criticism.
Get on with it.
Normally, in his day-to-day business about the school, Mr. Tomkin walks with an easy swagger, like an admiral patrolling his quarterdeck, and he swishes the air with his right hand as if reaching for an invisible phantom cane. I admit that when he smiles, he has the bluff charm of a good professional Santa Claus. But he becomes angry too quickly, like an infuriated infant. And his rages are the rages of the mad Roman emperors of old. When squared up to by a rich or important parent or an influential governor, his manners are impeccable. And if it is possible to grovel discreetly, this is what Mr. Tomkin does. Well, that's it. Is it awful?
It's exactly like him. Anyone would know. It sounds...
Yes?
Well, it sounds as if it was written by a grown-up. It's awfully good.
Oh, it's a parody of real writing, really. But I'll probably grow out of that. Mama says I can't expect to write anything all that good at 12. People just don't. But the thing is, I can't invent anything. I don't seem to be able to make things up. Oh, I'd love to write a Dickens or a Conrad, but I just can't get started.
I couldn't do it at all.
You get very good marks for your compositions.
That's subjects. If the subject's exciting, it's easy. And I don't know half as many words, and I never get the grammar quite right.
I think you may turn out to be better than me.
I could never have written that.
Oh, I just pick things up quickly. That's all it is. It's a knack. I don't know whether I shall ever get married. I'm not sure I'm the marrying sort. It might be fun to have a mistress, or just a very close friend. I think I probably need people. I need them round me. But the problem is, I don't actually like them very much. Do you?
To no one's great surprise, Anthony won the top scholarship to Harrow. I was set to take the same exam a term or two later, and so I hoped to be there with him. At prize-giving that term, Tomkin gave him a splendid send-off.
And last, there is the skeletal but somewhat frightening figure of Moore. Now, Moore may be no athlete. I think all of us know that. But Moore can do a great many things that the rest of you can't. Moore is not only clever, which is something we know from the Harrow Scholarship, but he is also sophisticated, well-read, and to all of us here, very learned indeed. And since this is his last day in the school, I think I can tell him that he is probably the cleverest boy that I have ever taught. We all know him to be modest and generous, and we here, his teachers and his friends, expect great things of him in the world outside. It now remains for me to give him the Leavers book, a complete Shakespeare, which I know he will enjoy.
That night, I sat reading in the library. At length, Anthony came in and, with a preoccupied sort of expression, sat down next to me.
Do you have any idea of how I feel about you?
What do you mean?
Oh, I don't know. I have a friend, I suppose. I seem to be of some value to you. I'm awfully grateful. I couldn't be more grateful. It's probably such a little thing to you. But it isn't to me.
And then, without putting his hand upon my shoulder, as I feared he might, without any demonstration whatsoever of outward emotion, he got up and left the room. After he had gone, I sat for a time without moving. I thought about what he had said and meant, and what had passed. I began to ask myself if this was love, this feeling that I had awoken in him, this strange closeness that I felt. What was this so unfamiliar to me, this curious and rather crooked emotion? This sense of a bond where once no bond had existed, what was it? Later I tried to return to my book, but my mind was not on it, and I drifted into other, more pressing patterns and thoughts. Hours later, in our large, cold dormitory, I undressed and climbed between the sheets, but I was still in some faint trance, some absorption that I could not explain rationally. I lay there in the dark for a long time that night, and even then I could make nothing of this new emotion. I could not tell from where it came or the manner of its operation. But I knew that I was, in some respects, an entirely changed person. Someone who had perceived in the order of things a new and compelling perspective. A young man who had lost in a few hours the absolute separateness of childhood.
The boys are home again, all over the world.
Oxford, Northwood. The train standing at platform 2 is a 6:10 from Paddington, calling at Kidlington, Fletcherton, Chapley Hall, Capon, Banbury.
Yes, sir?
Tremaine. Philip Tremaine.
Oh, yes, indeed. Peckwater Quad, Staircase 2, Room 1. I'll take you over.
Oh, thank you.
There's drinks for freshmen in all at 6:45, sir.
Right.
Well, this is certainly a change after National Service.
I can believe it's only too well, sir. Which service were you in?
Oh, the RAF, at a base in Uxbridge.
Oh, that was my service too, sir. During the war.
Oh?
Can't say I enjoyed it. Those bloody flight sergeants. Yes flight, no flight, flight bloody this and flight bloody that. Of course, I was a sergeant myself by the end.
I've got a rather old friend up here too. I hope it's going to be fun.
What would his name be, sir?
Anthony Moore.
Oh, yes.
Do you know him? We were at Harrow together.
I like to think I know every gentleman in the college, sir. Mr. Moore's quite a personality.
Good evening, Reg. I'm afraid it's speak of the devil.
Ah, good evening, sir. I understand you know Mr. Tremaine.
Certainly I do.
Anthony.
I saw the two of you struggling across the quad. I have to be somewhere else in about 20 minutes, but I did just want to say hello. I heard from the lodge you'd be here on the 6 o'clock train.
It's good to see you again, Anthony. It really is.
Ah, I imagine you two gentlemen will have plenty to talk about. Good night, sir. Good night, Mr. Tremaine.
Good night. Oh, and thank you.
Night, Reg.
You can be a rather bloody-minded sort. I don't think any of them here have forgiven me for putting a swan in the fountain last term. They just found it there swimming around with a black bow tie round its neck. Took them all morning to get it out.
You've changed a bit.
I'm in my element, which I never really was, Baron.
Byron was an old Harrovian.
Byron was also a bloody aristocrat. How was the cricket?
The cricket was glorious.
You should have stayed there. You should never have left. You should have played for the 11 and been head of the school for the rest of your life.
Perhaps. I was rather good at it.
Listen, there are lots of people you must meet.
People?
Women. There's a woman here called Laura Kennedy who must be the single most brilliant person of her year.
Really?
And who happens also to be quite extraordinarily beautiful.
Ah.
I'm very smitten. I really am. She talks almost as well as I do.
She'll never be short of enemies then, will she?
You must come to some meetings. You must come and hear me speak. I do quite a lot of it. I'm quite a celebrity. Philip, my dear friend, It really is wonderful to see you again.
Art. Sponsorship of the arts. It's clearly Mr. Churchill's obligation to pursue this with the same vigour and enthusiasm with which he pursues everything else. His government must support the artist without discrimination. More depends upon it than is sometimes imagined. If the government of Germany had allowed Hitler into art school, had encouraged him, had asked him to design buildings, had commissioned paintings from him, then Europe might be a happier place today. Hitler, after all, for all his faults, was a better painter than Churchill. Was I good?
You weren't bad at all.
I'm used to extravagant flattery. Was I brilliant?
Just good.
I might have known. A bucket of cold water. Oh, excuse me a moment. There's someone I must talk to. Huh? You'll be all right, won't you?
Come on, I'll be fine.
You poor man, you look terribly lost. Are you a freshman?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm afraid I make a point of talking to strange men, otherwise I never meet them. Were you listening to the debate?
A friend of mine was speaking.
Oh, who?
Anthony Moore.
God, it would be, wouldn't it? Are you Philip Tremaine?
I'm afraid so.
I'm Laura Kennedy.
Ah.
And why are you afraid so? All these men apologising for themselves, it makes no sense.
What's he said about me?
Oh, everything. He seems to admire you most of all for captaining the Cricket 11. He says you're his good angel.
Oh, I had no idea.
I bet you had. Modesty never fools me. You're not modest, are you?
No, probably not.
Good. We'll get along fine. I gather you write.
No, I mess about.
You're doing it again. You don't mess about. You've actually had a few things published.
Two things.
Well, come on, it's impressive.
No, it's not. Neither of them was long. Two very short stories.
I call that impressive.
Have you read them?
No. Why? Are they actually frightful?
Not frightful. Competent. I've got a lot to learn. And what do you do?
I do lots of things. If you mean what am I reading, I'm reading greats. I know a lot about Herodotus.
That sounds intimidating.
It is, rather.
Anthony tells me you're the cleverest woman in your year.
Well, there aren't all that many of us, which makes Oxford rather a dangerous sort of place. But he's probably right, going on the evidence to hand, or at least I hope so. He's brilliant. He's going to be a don.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's the obvious thing for him to do. His tutor is C.S. Lewis, and I gather it's all worked out. You do know who C.S. Lewis is?
Yes.
The view is that in his case, finals are a foregone conclusion.
Oh, I can't imagine Anthony messing up an exam. But I've always thought he wanted to go to London.
No, he will. He'll be that sort of don. He'll broadcast and dine with people, and then he'll get the train back here. Good heavens, you haven't got a drink. What? Well, don't stand here talking to me. Go and get one. Must be awful being sober with all the rest of us a little drunk. Go on. I'll have a glass of white wine.
Right.
Oh, you've met, I see.
We seem to have done.
Yeah, I'm fetching Laura some refreshment.
Good man. How was it?
So for you. That joke's been made before.
Still a good joke.
Yes, but it's been made before.
There's only red, I'm afraid.
That won't do.
Oh, fine by me. I'll have it.
Your chum has no taste.
Mm-hmm. He has, actually. And I dislike the word chum.
I need a cigarette.
Don't look at me. They give me asthma.
Here.
Thank you. You're a sportsman and you smoke.
Oh, they do exist.
Anthony says there's nothing more gross than a woman who smokes.
Except a woman who gets drunk.
There's this list of things I'm not allowed to do. I have to be constantly on my guard. A woman in an ocean of men.
Yeah, it sounds all right to me.
That's because you're a man.
Come on.
Oh, are we going somewhere?
I've had enough of this.
The night's still young.
No, it's not. Come on.
I'm sorry, Philip. I'm being physically dragged away from you.
Yes, he's always been possessive.
I bet. So long.
Good night. Laura.
Good night, Philip.
Have fun.
Reg! Reg!
I lock up regular as a rule, sir, but I don't suppose making an exception this once will do any harm.
Thanks, Reg. It's very good of you. I'm afraid I've been to a rather wonderful party. A very attractive young woman.
Well, don't try to bring her over the wall, sir. We never fall for that.
I think I can be a bit more subtle.
I'm sure you can, sir. Good night.
I'm very impressed, Anthony. I think she's gorgeous.
I know. I can hardly believe it myself. I must seem like the least likely person. I'd have thought you'd have wanted someone very handsome and debonair, but... Well, it doesn't seem to matter. You've never had any trouble with women, have you?
Hmm? Oh, I don't know.
They seem to like me to begin with. The odd thing is I hardly know Laura, really. I never feel particularly at ease when I'm with her. It's not like talking to you. And yet I feel so strongly. I think... This sounds ridiculously premature, but... I think I want to marry her. I'm having a wonderful time, Philip. I really am. God knows what things are going to be like after this.
For the next few weeks, I glimpsed Laura only briefly across rooms or with other people. Then, one Thursday afternoon, I bumped into her in Blackwell's, and she asked herself back to tea. I had the impression she was in some kind of trouble.
We met at a seminar. I was reading a paper on the classical influence on Augustan literature. It's a sort of hobby of mine. I thought I was doing rather well. And then suddenly there was this ferocious man arguing me into the ground. So when he apologised and asked me to have tea, I simply didn't dare to say no.
He can be intimidating, I know.
Of course, you know him much better than I do. That's why I'm here. And he and I don't know each other all that well, except for... I have this idea that he's mildly unhinged. I worry about what might happen if things went wrong. I do have such respect for him. But I feel tied down. And I don't think I should feel that. I resent it, rather. I have this demon in me. You know the feeling.
I know it well.
What do you advise?
I don't know. Follow your nose, maybe.
Yes. That seems very sane.
That night, I took her to the theatre. The Gilbert and Sullivan Society was staging Iolanthe. And then I took her to dinner. And then she came back with me to my rooms.
Oh, God, Philip, what are we going to tell him?
Well, he'll have to learn.
I can't bear the idea of hurting him.
Not much can be done about that now. I did know he hadn't slept with you.
Oh, how did you know that?
You don't fidget around like that with a woman you've slept with.
I suppose not.
He'd no God-given right to you.
No.
You don't give up your freedom just because someone asks you out. Oh, yes, I know it'll upset him. I feel bad about that too, but... This is what happens. He can't be protected forever. 2 evenings later, he came round, very drunk, and stood swaying in my doorway.
How could you? How could you? I trusted you.
Anthony.
I trusted you utterly.
Anthony, listen. No,
you listen.
Please.
You listen. You could have had any woman that you wanted. Anyone in the world. You could have done what you like with anyone. You could have crossed the globe and had anyone. Anyone at all. Anyone that you wanted. Anyone except Laura. You know that. You know that perfectly well. I know damn well you know it, but because it was Laura, because she was going out with me, because she was mine, you wanted her. You wanted to see if you could do it. I know you.
Anthony, that's not...
Oh, yes, it bloody well is. You wanted to compete. You've wanted to for years. There are plenty of things that you can do, but you want to do what I can do as well. And you never will. You never will because you're not as clever. You haven't my talent.
I know.
You've killed me. Do you realise that? My life is in ruins. I'll never be happy again. I trusted you, and you've killed me.
Anthony, look, please...
I suppose I can't ask you for friendship's sake just to leave her. Leave her and let me do the rest. No, of course I bloody well can't. I can't ask you for anything. You're worthless, Philip. You're the most worthless, godforsaken, bloody awful person I've ever known.
He never spoke to me again.
I'm as upset as he is, Pa.
Don't be ridiculous. How could you possibly be? Do you expect me to be objective? I've known Anthony since he was 8. It seems to me you've done an appalling thing. I've tried to raise you as a considerate, thoughtful and honest young man, and I've failed utterly.
I have feelings for this girl, you know. I can't simply put them to one side.
You may not credit this, but there are certain things that in friendship a man simply does not do to another man. What you've done is one of them. Don't ask me to salve your conscience. I'd hoped for better, and I've been bitterly disappointed. What does any father say to a son like you?
I keep thinking of him. I think of him more than I can tell you.
Oh, Laura.
I should never have left him.
No one forced you, for Christ's sake. No one even made it difficult.
You think it was easy?
I don't think it was difficult.
It hurt him abominably. I knew it would when I did it.
So did I. Look, these things happen between people.
Yes, but they shouldn't.
Oh, don't be naive. If you think that, then go. If it'll make your conscience easier. You talk as if I was the only one to blame. That's nonsense, and you know it. Well, if you think he's the genius you say he is and you're missing out, then go. If you think I'm mediocre and dull and talentless, then for God's sake, grab your things and go. I never pretended to be like him. He was simply my friend. I wish I'd never met him.
Tremaine!
What? Oh, coming. Look, I'm in next. If you think you've backed the wrong horse or... If you think I've destroyed his art or genius or whatever it is, then pack up now and go. The sooner the better.
And, of course, she did. I heard later that she'd gone back to Anthony. Apparently there'd been some stormy reconciliation, and when they gave him a fellowship, he married her. I wasn't invited to the wedding. Didn't expect to be. But shortly afterwards, Laura sent me a sweet, rather generous letter. She asked me to forgive her. She felt she'd let me down. In the next year or two, I gathered that she hadn't been very faithful. There were terrible quarrels, so their friend said, and in an effort to sort things out, Anthony bought a small cottage in Dorset where they spent the vacation. By then I was living in London, and from time to time Laura would come up to town to shop.
Thanks, Philip.
Go on in.
It's impertinent of me to barge in like this and just assume we're still friends.
I think we're still friends. It's lovely to see you.
I thought you could only tell me to go away again.
You're wearing an awful lot of clothes.
It is the middle of November.
Does Anthony know you're here?
No. I had some shopping to do. I had to get up to town. I think I'm really a city girl deep down. I can't stand that tiny little farmhouse. Nothing all day but the sheep from across the field and Anthony's typewriter.
You should have been an air hostess.
I thought you'd say something like that. He's very kind. I don't think he's ever done a cruel thing in his life. But, oh, God, I do get tired of never seeing anyone.
You look terrific. A drink?
I've come here to be comforted, Philip. I know you think I treated you badly, and I do love Anthony. I should probably never have got involved with either of you. It breaks my heart what happened. I'm not very happy, as you can probably tell.
Laura.
I won't say anything to Anthony. God, do you honestly think he'd mind? He knows it's the price of peace, otherwise we'll all go mad. And I do know now to keep very quiet. I've learnt so much from him, but I long sometimes for the ordinary. Ordinary, unneurotic, healthy people who lead happy, healthy lives.
I put her on the train 2 hours later.
So long, Philip.
Goodbye, Laura.
Be good.
I will.
What happened after was reconstructed with some difficulty. Laura apparently arrived back very late. Anthony seemed to have locked her out. At any rate, all her things, her clothes, everything she owned, was found piled up in the yard. They think she probably broke a window and climbed in, and they think he simply picked her up and carried her out again. Then he took a shotgun, shoved her up against the gate, and shot her with it. Then he went into the house, reloaded it, put the barrel in his mouth, and blew his head off.
Retirement's treating me pretty well. I'm fighting fit. But I'm not as agile as I once was. I need a new back. There we are. Old age.
Do you still play golf?
Oh, I wish I could. That boy who was in your form, John Stevenage, he used to be awfully nice and come down and give me a game. I was lost. He used to say, well, John, the boot's on the other foot now. Of course, when he was with me, he was a mathematical idiot. But I gather these days he's making a mint in the city.
I've heard that too.
Do you keep up with anyone at all?
I'm afraid not. Now, I've been very lazy about it.
Oh, life leads us in unexpected directions. We can't all keep up. That boy Moore, the one you used to be so thick with, I gather he killed himself.
I did hear that.
Dreadful waste. Over a woman, I'm told. I can remember him very well. He wasn't a happy boy. And everyone expected great things of him. You used to see him quite a bit, didn't you?
That's right. I'm afraid we lost touch at the end, National Service and all that. I saw the paper, of course.
A dreadful waste. Can't have been happy. I suppose he may be happier now.
Yes. I'm sure that's true. I must be getting along, I'm afraid.
Yes, of course. Of course. Don't let me keep you. But any time you're passing, it's open house. Old boys all the time. When are you off to Greece?
In about a week. It'll be nice to see some sun.
Oh, I bet.
I'm afraid I find this country rather depressing. And I've always wanted to travel.
You couldn't have picked a better place. That deep, dark sea. Do send me a card, if you've a moment. I suppose they'll be working you quite hard.
I doubt that. I can't believe teaching a little English for the British Council will be all that arduous. Well, I want time to think. I'd like to write a book. I'm really just being paid for getting away.
Well, Tremaine, it's been jolly nice to see you again. Do drop by when you eventually get back.
I certainly will. Anyway, thanks for the tea. And take care, sir.
Oh, I'll do that. Goodbye, Tremaine.
Goodbye, sir.
The dead live a long time within us. In what we feel and breathe and think. They disrupt and confound our lives. They're not gone, not old, so long as I'm alive. Awake at night, I dream and cannot be still. In the dark, I hug my memories close. Your health, your very good health. Cheers.
In Antony, Ronald Pickup was Philip Tremaine. George Baker, Mr. Tomkin. Benedict Taylor, Antony Moore. And Tessa Peake-Jones, Laura. Philip's father was played by Patrick Troughton. The young Philip, Barnaby Rhys-Jones. And the young Antony, Thomas Amlott. Brian Smith was the bookseller and the porter, and Richard Durden the consultant. The play was written by Andrew Rissick and directed by Jeremy Mortimer.